Thank you, Chandra. All right. It's always a great pleasure to come to KITP. I thought I'd start with this phase diagram. We've seen it before, and as with the previous talk from Louis, I'll be looking in this region, and I'll be giving an overview of a number of evidences that we have for, first of all, quantum phase transition, a zero-temperature phase transition, and then second of all, quantum critical behavior associated with that phase transition in this doping range. I've decided to use this old-fashioned pointer just because I can. I'm also a little frightened of Doug Scalapino here in the front row because he can get rough sometimes. So the title is An Overview of Evidence for Quantum Critical Point Underlying the High-Temperature Superconducting Dome. There's two new probes. I have to wear my high magnetic field director hat at the beginning and the end of my talk. Two new techniques for high field research using focused ion beam sample shaping, pioneered by Philip Mohl in a number of beautiful experiments. It was used, and some of the data I'll show here, to acquire high precision magnetotransport on a cuprate superconductor. And then specific heat in high magnetic fields to measure total electronic density of states that participates in superconductivity, in this case, in a nictide superconductor. So I'll be talking mostly about the cuprates, but I'll also talk about the nictides in this talk. I'll talk about a number of phenomena, evidence for a peak in the Hall number. I put that in quotes because this is 1 over the Hall coefficient. And there's a non-monotonic evolution of the Hall effect with doping, evidence for linear and T-resistivity in the low temperature limit. We saw some in Louis' talk. I'll show some other evidence for that. Evidence for linear in H magnetoresistance in the low temperature limit. So this is one of our newer results. This is in a cuprate. There are similarities and contrasts with what's been reported from James Analytis' group in barium-122, the nictide. So I'll talk about that. Evidence for quasi-particle mass divergence. This is the Brad Ramshaw paper in YBCO quantum oscillations, and I bring that up because the data end up being quite similar in a cuprate, in a nictide using specific heat, where there's a quasi-particle mass divergence that seems to extrapolate such that the divergence is right at optimum doping, optimum TC. First of all, I'd like to thank my many collaborators. Paula Gallo was a postdoc at the Magnet Lab. She's now back in Bogota, Colombia, and she's done this work. Samples came from Yvonne Bozovich's group in Brookhaven. Zhijun Lian, who's a grad student of mine, who's working with this group, and the samples came from Crepi in Tokyo, Shinpei Ono's group, and Camilla Moore on the mass divergence in the nictide measured with specific heat, and these samples come from Ian Fisher's group. And the funding for the Magnet Lab comes from National Science Foundation, DOE, and the state of Florida. So I'll show this slide many times. The one in red is where we are in the talk. And so this is direct evidence of a quantum phase transition near optimum TC, a peak in the Hall number in LSCO and single layer BISCO. And I'll discuss whether or not that peak in the Hall number is a general phenomenon. So if we look at the Hall coefficient, so this would be the slope in the Hall voltage versus magnetic field. So the Hall voltage is linear in magnetic field. The slope is relatively temperature independent over some temperature range. If you measure at low fields, you can't go below TC. And so what you see on these axes where we've normalized now the Hall coefficient as 1 over the Hall coefficient normalized per copper atom, so this is 1 carrier per copper, you get this monotonic increase that looks to us like it's approaching a divergence going to a positive infinity as you approach the Van Hove singularity that's known to exist in LSCO at around 0.3 doping. But if you look at low temperatures, you can now see that the data here are, instead of being monotonic with doping, they become non-monotonic, 0.12, 0.14, 0.16, 0.17, 8, 9. If we zoom into this region and we look at additional dopings, you get this curve here on the right. So it's the same data, just new sets where we've inserted additional samples, and you see that there's a substantial number of dopings for which the Hall coefficient is anomalously low. So when you do 1 over Hall coefficient, you end up then getting a peak in the Hall number. And that peak is occurring at right around 0.17 in LSCO. This is work that was published in 2009. This was actually the second system in which we saw this effect. The maximum TC in these samples is right here where the peak occurs. And again, Hall number, we put in quotes because we know that as you approach the Van Hove singularity, the Hall number isn't actually giving you the number of carriers because it actually will diverge to positive infinity and come back at negative infinity when you're on the other side of the Van Hove singularities. A few years earlier, in 2003, we saw this phenomenon in single-layer BISCO. It was easier to measure BISCO because the samples are naturally platelet-shaped, and so you get an enhancement in the Hall voltage. And here, even though the peak is occurring apparently at 0.15, the important thing is that in this lanthanum-doped BISCO compound, you don't have good control over oxygen. It's heavily compensated. It's very difficult to know the actual doping. And the important thing is that the maximum TC occurred, again, just to the right of the peak in the Hall number. So there seems to be a peak in the Hall number, 1 over RH, right around optimum doping in both of these systems. And then if you look, Rick Green's group has studied the electron-doped samples, and they see evidence of a phase transition which is a kink and a change in sign of the Hall coefficient. So there, they're actually seeing the Van Hove singularity, and it's occurring right at optimum doping. So this is one thing that seems to be different from the electron and the Hall-doped cuprates. The electron-doped cuprates seem to have the Van Hove singularity occurring right at optimum doping, and the Hall-doped have this still unexplained non-monotonic behavior in the evolution of the Hall voltage. So this is taking data from LSCO from Yuichi Endo, where he's established that the low doping follows the P line. The early quantum oscillation data from Louis Taillefer's collaboration at Toulouse, with Toulouse, where they looked and saw the quantum oscillations in ortho 2 YBCO. Shortly thereafter, there were measurements made in YBCO 124. And these are, this is the data point on 1 plus P from thallium that comes from ARPAs and from quantum oscillations. And then if we put our two data sets on here, we actually have an apparent number of Hall carriers that goes well above 1 plus P in LSCO. We can go to larger dopings where you see this does not see the 1 plus P line. And Louis has reported in 2016 data up to, these two were up to 60 Tesla because HC2 is somewhat lower, but now up to 88 Tesla. The YBCO has a much higher TC, much higher HC2, and you need higher magnetic fields to study. And so if we look at the data from our LSCO and we ask the question, the number of carriers per doping, is there a peak or not a peak? The YBCO data are state-of-the-art data at 88 Tesla, which is a state-of-the-art magnetic field. But because of the HC2, one's just not able to take data below about 40 Kelvin for these dopings, 125 for these dopings. And this is simply because we don't have a strong enough chemical bond to make a strong enough magnet to make magnetic fields strong enough to suppress the superconducting state in YBCO down to very low temperatures. And so if we were to white out the data, if HC2 were as big in LSCO as it is in YBCO, these are the data we would not be able to see. And so we wouldn't know if there's a peak in LSCO. So at least from my perspective, it remains an unanswered question whether YBCO would see a peak if we could get to low enough temperatures. We just aren't able to do it yet. And so clearly we need bigger magnets. That's the message here. Some things Louis and I agree on. So now switching to linear and T resistivity as temperature goes to zero and an electron doped cuprate. This, to my knowledge, the electron doped cuprate work from Rick Green's group were the first to see a linear and T down to very low temperatures, dilution refrigerator temperatures. This is recent work, 2011, but they have some older work. This happens to be in LCCO, so lanthanum cerium copper oxide, and it's not linear up to very high temperatures. This is only up to about 20 Kelvin. Sorry, I blocked the axis. This is 10, 20 Kelvin. But it's linear from about 20 Kelvin down to 20 millikelvin. So it is over three orders of magnitude that linearity is seen in this material. And this is, I think, the lowest temperature to which a dead linear in T resistivity has been measured in any cuprate.
Minuscule slope.
Minuscule slope, says Chandra. So, yes, the background is large in this compound. And then here they're measuring NH, so it goes negative. There's some evidence of divergence and it comes back, but they really don't have enough data in here to know if there's a peak or to see if there's a divergence or not. But I think that then this is very recent work that they're doing now. Okay, moving to point three. Evidence for linear in magneto and in H resistivity. So linear magnetoresistance, new evidence for quantum criticality near optimum doping in a cuprate superconductor. I'll say at the outset, we don't know why magnetoresistance should show no energy scale in the same way that apparently linear in T demonstrates no characteristic energy scale. But I'll show you how clear the evidence are that in fact the magnetoresistance is linear. It's a clearer signature than has been able to be reported in the barium 122. So, but the first report of linear magnetoresistance, it came from James Analytis' group in 2016, just last year. And it was reported to 90 Tesla in an iron nictide superconductor. This is barium iron arsenic doped with phosphorus, or substituted with phosphorus. And as you can see at the lowest temperatures, once you've suppressed superconductivity with a 50 Tesla field, going all the way up to 90 Tesla, it looks like it's a straight line. And this has been normalized to the value of the resistance at 300 Kelvin, so it's hard to immediately extract the resistivity here, but it is linear magnetoresistance. Now we're reporting it in an archive posted this year that Paul Gallo is first author on, linear magnetoresistance from MBE thin films, and I'll come back and talk about this this data in some detail. But to give you a sense of the data, it's going as something like H squared, but then it falls off of H squared. By the time you're at about TC of 40 Kelvin, it's looking quite linear, and then it stays linear down to, and in this case, with 80 Tesla fields, there's still an indication of linearity even at 4 Kelvin. So this is now presenting that work. We start with high quality cuprate MBE grown films. Who are you going to call? Ivan Bozovich. This, if you did not know that this is LSCO, I think that most people who've been in the business would think that this is YBCO. This is an incredibly good linear in temperature behavior. It's a sharp transition, and the extrapolation is almost to the origin. So the residual resistivity is pretty much 1.5 microohm centimeters with a similar error bar. The slope is about 1 in units of microohm centimeter per Kelvin. So this is right at 0.19 doping. We studied a series. This is the first time I've had a chance to use that, so I'd like to do it again. No, that's enough, Chandra, come on. After a while, I won't say that out loud. I'm being tape recorded. So these are the data going all the way up to 180 Kelvin, coming down. Beta is how we define our slope with magnetic field. This is the same data as this, just plotted larger so that you can see the lower temperature data. There's a remarkably linear magnetoresistance, and what we do is we plot the slope at high fields as a function of temperature, and below about 25 Kelvin, it seems to lock in. And so this is what we call the low temperature limiting behavior of the magnetoresistance. Now, this is the remarkable finding in this study. For a very large temperature and field range, rho of B is linear in B. So for all temperatures below about 50 Kelvin and all magnetic fields above about 50 Tesla, we have linear magnetoresistance. And here's rho versus T for different magnetic fields. We have linear in T resistivity. So we have simultaneous occurrence of linear in H and linear in T behavior over a large region in phase space. So in particular, this is inconsistent with the quadrature behavior that's seen in barium-122 and James Annalidis' beautiful work on the nictide, where they see that the resistivity, once you subtract this, zero field, zero temperature value, it seems to scale as the sum in quadrature of KBT and mu naught H. And their prefactors, which they call alpha and gamma, we call alpha and beta, have a ratio of about 1. So we looked at our ratios. So we look at rho versus T as a function of doping. We look at rho versus H as a function of doping. The slope in rho versus T follows this line. The slope in rho versus H follows this line when you've normalized by standard units or KBT and Bohr magneton in particular. The ratio is of order 1. It's not precisely 1, which it seems to be at the one doping that's reported in the study by James Annalidis' group. The ratio is 1. For us, the ratio, in fact, has a doping dependence. But it is rather striking. This is random scatter in the data. And it's rather striking that this point is a little bit high, that one's a little high, this one's high, that one's high. There's no reason why the random scatter here would track unless the two phenomena are somehow related. And perhaps, therefore, the real doping of this sample is slightly lower than we think, and so it would move to the right, and that would move to the right. This is slope versus temperature, this is slope versus field. So there seems to be another signature of criticality near optimum doping in the cuprates, and that is this very large and linear magnetoresistance. So, as I said, this linear magnetoresistance was first reported in an iron nictide group in Annalidis' group. We've reported it in MBE-grown films. And now we have preliminary data up to 93 Tesla in a bulk sample that's been shaped by focused ion beams. So this is using some of the techniques that Philip Mohl pioneered. Ross McDonald has helped Arkady Schechter come up to speed on the fibbing of these samples. And here we're going up to 93 Tesla, and you can see at 10 Kelvin and at 20 Kelvin how linear the magnetoresistance is for this bulk sample. So now I'll step back and present results that remind you of some results from a few years ago on quantum oscillation data that Brad Ramshaw and his collaborators collected on YBCO that show direct evidence of quasi-particle mass divergence, which is a signature of quantum criticality, near the quantum critical point in YBCO. And then my final data will be our new specific heat results on a nictide that show a similar behavior from specific heat. So these are quantum oscillations as samples are approaching optimum doping, these three stars in YBCO. As you can see, you're starting to run out of magnetic field here. This is 80 Tesla before you've apparently suppressed the superconductivity. You can certainly see some quantum oscillations from which you can get not only an area of the Fermi surface, but also a quasi-particle mass. But clearly we need bigger magnets, in case I haven't pointed that out before. So plotting the M star from these quantum oscillation measurements, this is what Ramshaw gets in his 2015 Science paper. If you then plot this as 1 over M star, then extrapolate to 0, that in principle would be where the mass diverges. And you can see that the extrapolation looks like it comes out pretty close to where the quantum critical point is believed to be. And with 80 Tesla, you can only suppress the superconductivity this far. These data on HC2 come from Louis Taillefer's group. The mass data come from two papers, one headed up by Sushitra Sebastian, the other by Brad Ramshaw. And in case I hadn't mentioned, we need bigger magnets to be able to actually get to the point where in pure YBCO, we can measure the fundamental behavior near the quantum critical point. So the final point for my presentation is evidence for quasi-particle mass divergence that comes from specific heat and a Nicktide. So we are able to measure the electronic density of states that participates in superconductivity, and I'll show you the evidence for that mass divergence. So this is the barium-122. We got these samples from Ian Fisher's group, and the Fermi surface is more complicated than in YBCO in the sense that you have four pockets, two electron-like, two hole-like. The beta pocket, the blue pocket, people have been able to measure the quantum oscillations as a function of doping, and they see a mass increase, a mass divergence as you approach optimum doping of 0.3. What we wanted to do is look at specific heat and see what evidence we might be able to collect for a mass divergence from a thermodynamic measurement as you approach optimum doping. So we'll be reporting on 5 different dopings for which we had enough field to access the normal state. These 5 dopings, as we move over towards optimum doping, we run out of magnetic field. So this is C over T versus T squared. The T squared term, this slope here, is are the phonons. And this is down to about 1.5 Kelvin or so, and you get a standard linear dependence, C over T versus T squared at zero field, and then as you turn on a magnetic field, this curve just rises up. The phonon term doesn't change, but you're suppressing superconductivity, so you're recovering states here in the zero temperature limit. So if we look at the low temperature value of the specific heat as a function of field, it's going up first as square root of h. And the square root of h dependence indicates that you have nodes in the superconducting gap. The saturation indicates that you're reaching the normal state, above, in this case, about 12 Tesla for this doping of 0.46, which is pretty far overdoped. The change in the specific heat from zero field to the normal state measures the total normal state electronic density of states of all the Fermi surface pockets that take part in the superconductivity. So if you're doing a quantum oscillation study, you can only probe those pockets that are clean enough for you to get quantum oscillations. But if you're doing specific heat, you're going to see all the pockets that are taking part in superconductivity, in which then superconductivity is suppressed by the high magnetic field. So we'll be comparing this value to this value to get our gamma, electronic gamma of the normal state. So if we look at the phenomenology of the electronic specific heat recovered by suppressing superconductivity, we were somewhat surprised that the saturation in specific heat is occurring right at the foot of the resistive transition. In this case, maybe a little bit below. This is taken on a mosaic of about 10 samples in order to get a big enough signal. This is taken off of one of the samples from that same mosaic. So a slight difference of a few Tesla doesn't cause us concern. If we look at a lot of samples and a lot of dopings, it's always the case that the saturation seems to occur right about where the resistivity is just picking up. So this implies that the bulk of the sample is non-superconducting at the onset of the resistance, which is a rather surprising result of this study. And the gamma H, as we call it, the electronic gamma that's recovered by applying a magnetic field, is 13.8 millijoules per mole formula unit Kelvin squared. So if we plot gamma H as a function of doping for the five dopings that we've measured, we see this dramatic increase, about a factor of two, over this relatively limited range of doping. The ratio of the two curves, these are the data from the quantum oscillations of the beta pocket. The ratio is about 2.6 at this doping, about 4.3. So when you look at all of the pockets, it's clear that some of the masses are diverging more rapidly than the beta pocket that's been probed with quantum oscillations. But if we take this data and we convert it to a mass, an effective mass, which is relatively straightforward to do in two dimensions, we can take this gamma H and compare it to the mass from quantum oscillations. And that's what we've done we repeat this data and we plot versus doping TC. Here is given in the black data points. These are the five samples that we've measured. This is 1 over m star, in the same spirit as the Brad Ramshaw study in YBCO quantum oscillations. And you can see that the best fit indicates a divergence at around 0.3 doping, which is very close to the optimum TC. So an overview of evidence for quantum critical point underlying the high TC dome. There's a peak and a Hall number, which evidences quantum phase transition, I think rather directly, a non-monotonic evolution of the Hall effect as a function of doping, and then phenomena evidencing a quantum critical point, quantum critical behavior near optimum doping include linear and T resistivity in both electron doped cuprates and hole doped cuprates, linear and H resistivity in the low temperature limit in both LSCO and barium-122, quasi-particle mass divergence from quantum oscillations and YBCO, from quantum oscillations in barium-122, and from specific heat in barium-122. So with my one remaining minute, I'll put back on my lab director hat and say that the Magnet Lab is its user programs. We have three branches in Tallahassee, Gainesville, and Los Alamos. These are three major transportation hubs in the United States, so we know you really want to come use the magnets if you find your way to our door. We served 1,778 users last year from 174 institutions across the United States, 321 from around the world. And the most important statistic is newcomers are welcome. In 2016, 24% of our principal investigators were first-time MagLab PIs. So if you've never used high magnetic fields but you think you'd like to, we know how to host first-time users and enable them to get good science out. So thank you very much, and I'll leave my final message unspoken. You've got a microphone.
Greg, so in your data of the magnetoresistance, did you guys try to scale all the curves in a single function of the ratio of H over T? Does it work?
It doesn't work very well, no. Although Chandra will probably argue with me on that point.
No, it doesn't work, but scaling does not mean it should work with square root of h squared plus t squared.
Yeah, it certainly does not work with h squared plus t squared. That's not what you were asking, right? And I have a plot here that I will find if only my eyes worked better. Here we go. So these are, this is in fact the 10 Kelvin data. You can see that unlike the barium-122, they don't really have the same slope, in fact far from it. And the 4 Kelvin data doesn't even show up on this plot because this is B over T. It's way out here and it falls off the line even more dramatically.
Can I make a quick comment on that?
Please.
This one that you just showed. If you look at the slope changes by about 0.2 or 0.3 time, while the temperature is changing by a factor of 40. It suggests that the proper scaling is h times function of h over t log t.
Except
changing logarithmically.
Right. So that would bring the higher temperature curves down even lower on this plot. And
the chef de conference.
So I'm really, really confused about something.
Okay.
Are you saying that you see this T linear and H linear behavior at one doping, or were you saying you see this over a range of doping?
So we see it over a range of doping. It seems to be most extensive in phase space at 0.19 doping. We don't have data to higher dopings.
Does it break down at lower temperature at lower doping, or?
Let's see. I don't know that I have the lower doping data here. So here's the linear in zero magnetic field. All of these show linear behavior in magnetoresistance, but it's not to over such a wide temperature range and field range. But it seems to exist over a relatively wide doping range.
Trying to understand, are you presenting evidence of a quantum critical point at a particular x, or of an anomalous phase with weird power laws over a range of x?
It's a very good question. The difficulty is that we can never get to the zero temperature, zero field limit to know if it's a single point.
Okay, but at least you can go to, say, to zero temperature in high field.
Right, and so the best linearity we've got is at 0.19. It's not as linear as you go to 0.16, for example.
And so also, you were welcoming new users. Are you interested in experiments on the effect of high magnetic fields on theoretical physics?
It seems to just confuse you.
Simple question. The specific heat and resistivity, that confused me. I can see why the resistivity is non-zero if you have flux flow and the specific heat hasn't hit its saturation point.
Right.
But what's the deal?
Well, it's what the data show. So let me see if I have a montage of all the data. If not, it's in the supplemental material. So here's a montage of, so each column is a different doping, and each row is a different temperature as stated here. So we've got three different temperatures here. But for example, if you look at 0.46, here's the lifting off of the resistivity and the saturation in specific heat. Here's the lifting off of resistivity and the specific heat seems to be saturating there. We didn't measure the higher fields. Here's the lifting off at 3 Kelvin and the saturation. And as you go to other dopings, it's the same phenomenon. So I'm reporting it as an established experimental fact. And to me, it means that the bulk of your sample has to be already in the normal state by the time the resistivity is lifting off.
One shouldn't take TC from resistivity seriously. If you look at magnetic susceptibility, is it
the same thing?
So we don't have magnetic susceptibility on these because they're relatively small, very platelet-like samples. So it's problematic.
Well, Steve basically asked it already, but I want to reiterate. I think what we've learned is in the nictites, we have a quantum critical point. In the cuprates, we don't. You said in your data, this is a quantum critical phase, whether we like it or not. So I don't actually understand why you said there was a quantum critical point. You have a phase.
Well, so it's difficult to do a doping dependence because one of my messages was we need higher field magnets.
As function of field, you change parameters in a phase diagram, it always stays linear. It's a critical phase.
Yes,
at a given x.
Yes, yes. It's above 4 Kelvin, right? It's above 4 Kelvin We're only able to measure it above HC2, so we're above 40 or 50 Tesla. Are things a little bit different if you're down at low fields? We won't know.
Yeah, but it's not temperature that cuts off field and field that cuts off temperature.
Right, and the evidence that we have that there's a single point where we've been able to do doping dependence in a normal state would be this peak in the Hall number. That seems to be the sharpest indication that there's a single, a special point in doping.
May I make a quick remark before Luis's question? You should never expect criticality to be at a mathematical point in a real system. You don't even get, in classical phase transitions, a unique transition temperature in actual systems. It's always there are crossovers due to disorder and all kinds of effects, so you should never expect a mathematical point.
Helium.
What did you say?
Louis' measurements were much closer to the point in that. I think here the crossovers have not been studied carefully enough, I think. Louis, your question.
Going back to the peak in NH that you plotted for two systems. So first I'd like to mention that, as you said, in YBCO we don't go low enough to rule out the possibility of a low temperature feature like that.
Right.
But in NDLSCO we definitely do. So at least one material doesn't show a peak. NDLSCO has a just monotonic drop in NH.
Right.
However, it's interesting that if you plot sigma XY instead of NH, we do see a peak actually also, and it's quite reminiscent of your data. So this brings me to my question, what do you think is the mechanism for the peak? I mean, I think it is tied to the onset of the pseudo-gap phase. Question is, what's the physics here of this increase?
Right, so if we treat this as an actual counting of the Hall, of the carriers, for sake of conversation, I'm struck by the fact that the peak seems to come up to, in this case, one, but again, we've only got discrete points here, and in this case, about one plus p. So at least in a hand-waving discussion, if we're down at p, we know that half of our carriers are locked up, you know, at p equals zero, we've got a Mott insulator. So we've got one carrier per electron that's locked up in Mott physics. And then as we remove electrons, as we hold dope, there's a Hall coefficient that seems to track p. Well, eventually we get mobile carriers, and it's almost as if there's, at this doping, you're releasing the carriers that were once tied up in the Mott physics to participate in the normal state. But then there has to be something special about this doping such that they then go back. It's the only way I can see to get a non-monotonicity. So that's hand-waving, to be sure, but I know that Steve has heard this joke. At one point, he dove deep into chemistry and then covered his tracks by saying he realizes he's going into chemistry, but his father was a chemist. And I realized that hand-waving probably moves out of science and into the realm of religion, but my father was a minister, and so.
But I guess you could get non-monotonic behavior from just a two-band model from electrons and holes, right? So maybe in the transition you have an electron-like contribution.
It's possible. Surface. It's hard to know from just this measurement.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I don't remember the details of his paper, but I remember reading a PhysRev letter last year by Pingsheng Dai, who's done quite convincing work that the phosphor slope system does not have a quantum critical point, and specifically that the evolution towards quantum critical behavior is interrupted by a first-order phase transition, following what Chandra said, which is one of the escapes. So if you ever
between the magnetism and the yeah. quantum or the critical dope or so optimum doping.
So
there
is in fact no quantum critical point in the phosphor dope system, and it's pretty convincing.
I see. I'm not familiar with that work.
No quantum critical point does not mean no quantum critical fluctuations.
That's a different statement. Yeah.
Right. One of the interesting things.
No divergent length.
Right. One of
no real quantum critical behavior. There are precursors.
Right.
Quantum critical
but
they don't
converge. And a transport measurement that may support that picture is that James Analytis' group has done magnetotransport, where they look at the rho naught plus AT squared, and that AT, that A value, diverges as you get towards optimum doping, but they never see linear T down to zero temperature. They see linear T at high temperatures, but it's always truncated by a T squared term.
Of what the underlying fluctuations with the divergent length are associated with. What order parameter?
We know there's a divergent pneumatic susceptibility there. It's been measured in magnetotransport, in elastoresistivity.
Yes, from that would be Ian Fisher's group, right. So they're seeing evidence of electron pneumaticity. And there's some resonant ultrasound data that we've got that I think will be very interesting, but we're still analyzing at this point.
Thanks. Greg, just a quick question. So one of the most remarkable aspects of the cuprates is this extremely linear T-linear resistance, right? So how linear is your B-linear LSCO data? Do you have maybe a derivative of it? Because some of the data seems that there could still be some remnant rounding. It's just a...
Right. You certainly do not have the orders of magnitude in dynamic range.
Sure.
Right? You've got a factor of two, roughly, over which it's linear.
But there seems to be quite a...
We need bigger fields.
Good.
But the best we can do is over you know, a factor of two, and it's flat within a
few percent.
It
just looks from this data that it's pretty much rounded over a relatively large range in fields, right? So I don't see the scale here, but the purple curve in the middle, for example, in that blown up graph.
This one?
No, in this one. Yeah, the purple one, lower. This
there.
One, for example. It
yes.
looks pretty round up to...
So I can plot the data for you.
It's linear among friends.
We need bigger magnets.
So I guess from a theorist's view, when you imagine a quantum critical point, you think of a fan,
mm-hmm.
right?
Right.
And what I'm grabbing is that there are discussions of like where the point is, and you go down to low temperature and try to see something happening down to lowest temperature. But do you see like beyond that, say, you know, to the right of that doping, showing some sort of a fan behavior? I understand the left bound is, say,
right.
pseudo gap or magnetic order or
right.
some order. But do you see the right bound, either of you or anybody else?
So we don't have clear evidence of a fan in looking, for example, at magnetotransport down to very low temperatures over that many dopings.
Does anybody have who has a...
So a good systematic study, I think, was Ando's in LSCO, but he's not able to suppress the superconductivity in that study. And Bertram Batlogg in the early days with Hide Takagi, but I don't think we have as clear a mapping at, say, 1.5 Kelvin across the entire doping range.
Yeah, I have a much more simple question about the very last part of your talk. Specific
okay.
heat in iron pictites.
Yes.
There are also data, as far as I understand, for penetration depths, and mass was extracted from this data.
I'm sorry, I can't hear.
There was data on the effective mass extracted from penetration depths. Well,
right.
Yuji Matsuda data. And can you compare your data, particularly the point where your mass diverges? Is it the same doping or shifted doping?
I guess I don't know that work well enough. Sorry. It's certainly the same doping from the quantum oscillations as our specific heat, but I don't recall.
They all agree.
Okay. Louis saying that they all agree.
Yeah, all these agree, actually. But another question, I mean, there was also specific heat data by Carrington, right? He measured the specific heat jump.
Yes.
Did you compare? Because that's an interesting comparison.
So the specific heat jump is a more difficult analysis, and we talk about that in the supplemental information. So this is measuring the jump at TC. And their analysis, they did the best that they could, which is to assume the BCS ratio of the jump to get the normal state density of states. We actually can measure the normal state density of states, and it doesn't equal the BCS value. So it suggests that that model-dependent analysis isn't the right one to make. We get very similar data up at TC in specific heat jumps, but because we can directly compare to the low temperature gamma H, we know that the ratio is not 1.3, it's down around 1.
Well, that's pretty close.
Well, it would give you a 40% different value, but. Wow. I've been in this business for decades.
So just to make a connection between this and what Louis was saying, so he was arguing that this, the linear slope, if you extrapolate it, it will go to zero when superconductivity disappears. So would you say the same thing about your linear magnetoresistance slope? Both of these guys are going to go to zero at 30%? Have you done this?
Well, first of all, Louis, would you say that rho versus T in your data would go to zero slope at the overdoped side where TC goes to zero? I don't think you would say that.
Well, we don't have data, but you guys have
I was talking about slope. See, this is basically what, this is d rho, well, this is micro.
This is d rho dt.
But the millielectron volt is either Kelvin or Tesla. If I get it right, you just put it in Kb and mu b, but this is slope in temperature or slope in magnetic field. This guy is going to go down, so this is basically what you call your slope in Kelvin.
It's only sensible, right?
I think that you're probably going to fall. Well, we know that as you get more overdoped, you'll start to get upward curvature. It's no longer linear. That's what's going to go away. Is your linear? It'll be linear at high temperatures, but it'll be upwardly curved at low.
PC, which is when superconductivity disappears. So the whole question is the same thing happening with your?
If you extrapolate your alpha by eye, it sort of goes, maybe a 0.3 or so.
Right. So it'll be down at about 8 when you're.
Well, you should have more terms.
At 0.22. It'll be 3 when you're at 0.25. It'll go down to 0 at about 0.28. So that's about where TC goes to zero.
This has to hit.
So if we, Cameron, if we extrapolate from here, it'll come down to zero at about 0.28, which is about where TC goes to zero.
But he says the beta one is extrapolating at a different.
It is definitely extrapolating. It will go to zero sooner than that.
Yeah, it just shows the danger of extrapolation.
That's my thought as well.
I think we should give. Greg, a break now? Thank you.
Thank you.